step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Mic check. Mic check.
Welcome back, Titans fans, to another edition of MCM Radio. I'm your host, Brandon, and joined as always by co-host August West. August, how are you today?
Man, I'm doing great today. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, fantastic. A little tired. Been a hectic week. I made it through Halloween. I hope you and all the listeners had a really fun one. It was just too hot for my taste. It didn't feel like Halloween this year, I'll be honest with you. Did you have a good one?
Oh, yeah, we had a really good Halloween. Didn't have as many trick-or-treaters as we were hoping for, but, you know, I think in urban areas now, everybody sort of flocks to certain neighborhoods, and we're just a little bit on the fringe of such neighborhoods. But, I mean, yeah, I'm absolutely with you. It was entirely too hot. I mean, I remember being a kid and freezing, walking around on Halloween trick-or-treating. But, you know, it's an El Nino year, whatever's going to happen, climate change, global warming. So be it, but yeah, we managed to have a pretty good time.
Man, with the Thursday night game last week and us on an odd schedule this week, we're recording on Thursday night, the 3rd, it seems just like we haven't spoken in forever, and the game seems so far away.
Yep.
The 3rd, it's a 4, or my time, Eastern Standard Time, it's a 4:25 kickoff, a 10-day wait, and the clock rolls back Sunday. I don't know if the game's ever going to get here, buddy.
I know. I was thinking about that earlier when we were kind of putting together some notes, that sort of thing. I mean, it almost feels like a bye week, getting that that 10 days in between games. I don't know what we're going to do when we get an actual bye week here coming up. But, yeah, I mean, it feels like it's been forever since we talked about the Titans, which is almost shocking because they came off such a good performance against Jacksonville. And now, we'll dive in deeper during the Know Your Enemy segment, but we're walking into what has been kind of a house of horrors in terms of the Titans going out to the West Coast, especially playing the Chargers, and some interesting matchups in there. But been a couple of newsworthy developments, I guess, since we last spoke.
Yeah, we really should lead off with Andre Johnson retiring. We hadn't really opined on that. That was announced day before yesterday, I believe. And my initial reaction wasn't necessarily one of surprise, to be honest with you, August, but I'm kind of sad about it. I just liked having him on the team. You know, I realize he probably didn't feel like, 10, 11 snaps a game was worth it, but I don't know. It was nice having him, and we had a couple good memorable plays, especially the one for the Lions. But I think that his role on this team has been served. So now I'm looking forward to, they moved Trey McBride up from the practice squad to fill that role. But I'll give you a moment to talk about it. Initial reactions, or what do you think the impact he had, or what's it going to be now that we don't have him? You got the floor, buddy.
I mean, I'm really disappointed in it. I know that it probably has something to do with the fact that over the past three games, he hasn't really been very involved. He's dropped some passes over the course of this season that you're not used to seeing from Andre. He's clearly not a deep threat by any means. He's not a really dynamic receiver anymore. But I felt like he had such a great niche in terms of helping us in the red zone and, you know, being a great end zone threat. You know, that's really where he's been the most valuable for us over the course of this season. And I don't think any of the other wide receivers that are on the roster have his combination of kind of, you know, toughness, veteran smart, and the ability to make a tough catch in a tight window and kind of body somebody out. You know, I'm more excited than anyone about the kind of reemergence of Kendall Wright, but that's not what Kendall does. And we don't necessarily have anybody else that I love for that role. I felt like he took some pressure off of Delaney when it comes to the red zone and it comes to the touchdown, you know, sort of area. And I thought even if he only got four or five snaps a game, I wish he would have just toughed it out, you know, sucked it up on a pride level and played that role for us. It worries me that we don't have him anymore for that position. But, you know, overall, I don't think it's going to make that big of an impact. It's probably two or three plays over the course of the season where it's 50-50 as the, if he would have made the play and somebody else doesn't. So, you know, not the biggest loss in the world, but still, you know, this is a wide receiving group that's full of role players. And he played a pretty defined role for us. I wish he would have just stuck it out, knowing that he probably could have gotten, you know, maybe three or four more touchdowns to add on to his Hall of Fame resume.
Do you think it really was just he felt like, you know, I'm done, you know? Or do you think there's something behind the scene, like maybe they were wanting to bring McBride up from the practice squad and we're going to end up releasing him, or any suspicions beyond that, or do you think it was just he felt like it was time? It just seemed kind of odd, but
I think when you get to that age, it's harder to recover from the game in, game out grind of playing in the NFL. You combine that with all of a sudden you're not getting as many targets as you were. You're not playing as big of a role down in and down out as he was the first, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of the season, you know, before Kendall came back. And I think he probably just looked at it and said that it wasn't really worth it for him anymore. I mean, that's the only thing that I can think of, because I don't think that it's a situation where, you know, we were trying to trade him and couldn't get anything for him, or, you know, he wants to get let go so that he can go chase a ring somewhere. You know, that's certainly possible, but I really doubt it.
Yeah, well, even with him retiring, we got his rights. We would have to release him or trade him. So I'd say he's done. I don't expect him to play again. But really, hats off to the guy, man. What a fantastic career, even though he made a lot of hay against our team. And he was easy to hate when he was on the opponent's sideline, but really just because of how good he was. So I wish him all the best in retirement, but
and he did a nice job for us for, you know, the first quarter of the season. I mean, he definitely came in and contributed. He sucked it up having a lesser role, and I will greatly appreciate that. I mean, he is definitely he has been a positive in the fact that we are where we are right now.
Oh yeah, and that was kind of the effect I felt like he was having, and I hope that the imprint sticks on the young receivers like Tajay Sharpe, more like at practice and then the receiver meetings, and less on the field on Sundays, you know. So that, I think, he made a really big impression on. And, you know, Tajay Sharpe tweeted out how heartbroken he was and called it, he's referred to him as big brother and sensei and stuff. So I feel like really a good guy for a young receiver to model his work ethic and you know, his game after. But moving on, I noticed another thing, that there was an article on NFL.com about the beloved Derrick Henry getting more involved in the offense. I guess they'd caught a malarkey quote on that. So I figure that's going to make everybody happy, because you know they got to be listening to the show, August. You guys have said time and time again, and I've seen it since I've been hosting with you, we start rattling some cages enough on here, and it seems like things start coming to pass. So what's your thoughts on that?
Hey, man, whatever it takes, whether they're listening to this show or not, whether we're, you know, helping spur conversation with some of the beat writers, that sort of thing, because I did notice more questions being asked about that after we came on and you know, started complaining about it, you know, to holy hell. Whatever it takes for it to happen, I'm just damn glad that it's happened, because I've been making the point over and over again. DeMarco Murray has been a complete revelation. He has been awesome. He's second in the league in rushing. He's been a really good receiver. He's been a, you know, kind of all-around great guy for us. He has absolutely been a dynamic presence with this offense. However, he is not so good that he should be relegating Derrick Henry to the bench. There is no excuse for Derrick Henry to be getting two or three touches a game, which is what happened over a couple of weeks stretch, basically until the game last Thursday, when, you know, he really popped through. He had his first touchdown, got almost 100 yards in total total yardage, you know, combined receiving and rushing. I mean, this team, it's smash mouth, man. You aren't going to be smash mouth with just one really good running back, especially when your best battering ram is the backup guy. So I appreciate the fact that they're, you know, couching it and, you know, it all depends on the flow of the game. It depends on how things develop. I can't imagine a situation, even if we get down 21-0 in the first quarter, you still have to make sure you get Derrick Henry 10 to 15 touches over the course of a game. And, you know, DeMarco is going to get more touches. He should. But that guy has to be involved because it helps set everything else up. We are at our best when we're 50% or maybe 60-40 rushing versus passing. And that's not a knock on Marcus. That's a ratio that almost any coach in the NFL would strive for. The Titans are in the position to do it, and, I mean, they have to not shoot themselves in the foot by not taking advantage of it.
I think it lends credence to your mantra that over the past four or five games, especially with the offense, about just tweaking the dials, you know, and it's finding the mix. And I appreciate that they realize pretty quick, what, two games where two or three snaps is just not enough for Henry. And then they went with, I believe, 16 carries against the Jaguars. I know that was kind of an anomaly with us jumping all over them in the first half. But I just like that they didn't make their mind up on the offense before week one of the season. You know, it has evolved a little bit. And the snap count has been evolving, and with the carries, I'm sure it's going to end up coming close to, you know, a 20 carry for Murray to 10 Henry or somewhere thereabouts. But, and I'd said in the past, August, I think that it's probably better to not look at it as less rushes for Murray, but it may be smarter for Henry's carries to come at the expense of some of Marcus's passes. You know, or maybe a difference between the two. I feel like right now the way the defense has been playing, the way the offense is built, we're trying to be ball control offense. I think we're better off with Marcus throwing 25 times a game as opposed to 30 or 31 until we get behind. But if we stay with our game plan, I think I'd rather take a couple passes from Marcus, kind of like me and you were speaking on last week. About don't be afraid to run it on 3rd and 4. You know, we got a really good chance of converting it. We don't have to throw for every third and in mid, and that's only gonna help protect Marcus. So I like seeing him get more involved because we've been such a fan. I do think Murray's played well enough to still be the workhorse, but I want Murray to get enough carries where he's in a groove because he's been so efficient, August. But I don't want him to get ran into the ground. I would really like Murray to still be here next year and be productive. You know, I think the two-headed running back attack, I want to see it carry at least another year beyond this, because however this season plays out, whether we win the division, and I the more I look at it, I think our only path to the playoffs is going to be winning the division. There's going to be a wild card team in the AFC South, August.
Yeah.
So, but
I think however the season plays out, if we project another off season like the past one, then I would love to, you know, preserve our running attack and then just add to this with better defense, maybe better receivers, or at least a better receiver. Go ahead. You had a point to make?
Well, like, I mean, you pointed out several times in previous episodes, the amount of touches that DeMarco Murray is on track to get is not healthy and not sustainable.
Yeah, it's too much.
I mean, in all honesty, it's going to hurt him. It's going to hurt us in the long run. So if you can offset some of that by getting Henry more involved now, and maybe there's a good argument to be made that over the first half of the season, it was a much better, you know, it was a good decision to lean on DeMarco, to let Derek get used to, you know, the flow of the offense, you know, what's going to happen with the offensive line, where your holes are, that sort of stuff, and then start really making it more of a 50-50 rushing attack moving forward. Because the kind of football that we play is much more valuable over the last quarter of the season than teams that are much more passing-oriented. Our ability to physically dominate the line of scrimmage and to get those short yardage to grind out games, to grind out drives, to take away team, their crowd out of it by having drives where we run it nine times and throw it once. We go 70-something yards and score a touchdown and you just can't stop it. That plays very, very well at the end of the season, which is when hopefully this team is going to be playing some competitive football to try and win this division and sneak into the playoffs. You know, they have to be able to sustain that over the course of an entire season. And, you know, making Derek a big part of the offense, or at least a bigger part of the offense, is going to play into that extremely well. And also, it gets back to what we've talked about over the past couple of weeks. If Marcus, if he, you know, ideally he throws maybe 25 to 27 times a game. Now, you also have to realize that he is really, really good in the two-minute drill. So that means at the end of the first half and at the end of the game, there's probably going to be drives where he throws it, you know, nine times on a 10 or 11 play drive.
Play drive.
So that means, yeah, so that means you're going to grind it out for the rest of those, because if they're so worried about stopping the run, when all of a sudden we go wide and Marcus is spraying the ball around and all of a sudden we're opening things up, teams aren't used to that because those aren't plays they've seen two or three times already in the game. Okay, it fits into this whole thing, you know, just like you were talking about, like we talked about before, tweaking the dials, making sure that you know, we're doing things that teams aren't expecting that they can't handle.
Yeah, I agree, and I like your point about how, you know, Marcus so far does seem to be a rhythm guy, you know. So, and I think that plays into his ability in hurry up, 2 minute drill kind of thing. We've seen him throw 5-6 passes in a row, complete all 5 and 6, or whatever it was. You know, we've also seen him where we haven't thrown it very as often, and then he misses kind of an easy throw. So I like the change ups with the drives, and then get our running backs in a rhythm, and make some hay that way. Maybe get some points on the board. And then if we can catch the defense, maybe loading up against the run. We know how good Delaney is as a receiving option, but he's a good enough blocker. He's the perfect guy with all the exotic to our smash mouth, is moving a guy like that around, getting the mismatch, and then all of a sudden going into a hurry up where Marcus throws, like you said, 8, 9, 10 times. You know, we're built to win by scoring about 20 points. 23, 24 points, you know, and not turn the ball over. And that's kind of where I'm saying we've been 3-1 in the last four games, had a really good shot of beating the Colts, and we win the games when Marcus hasn't been turnover prone. So that's why I think we mitigate that. You know, I'm in love with the guy. You know, I am fully behind him. But let's just be honest. He is as likely to lose us a ball game as he is to win us. Part of his maturation process, August.
Dude,
so
yes,
we got
Would you rather be the Seattle Seahawks or the New Orleans Saints? And honestly, I mean, right. Like where the Titans are right now, that's sort of the difference. Would you rather be the Carolina Panthers or would you rather be the Peyton Manning Indianapolis Colts?
Right. And we got a team. That's why I am hoping that we can go on a bit of a run. Another point why I've been so upset about it being warm, that we are built to win in cold weather. Of PFT actually was on local radio, I think today or yesterday, and he said, who of all the teams in the AFC South, the Titans would be the one in the playoff that teams would least want to see, regardless of record August, because we're the team most built to win in January. You know, I say defense travels, yeah. The running game. Marcus is coming along, and I do feel like he's getting better. We're built to win an ugly game. That's why I am kind of scared, a little preview, scared of going to San Diego and having play the Chargers when it's 80 degrees and sunny and there's, you know, everybody's running up and down the field. But if we can squeak into this playoff, end of December, January, we'll be able to compete we'll be able to play above our heads that way because they'll be playing right into what we're built to do.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, this team for the first time in a long time is playing a sustainable brand of football. And, you know, it's a style of football that, in all honesty, should get better as the season goes on, if we can stay healthy and if, you know, the matchups sort of line up the right way. So, moving on from that, there is one other article that I wanted to talk about. First of all, we're going to give Paul Kaharsky a double hit. Number one, I would encourage anyone to go to ESPN.com, the Titans page, or go to Paul Kaharsky's Twitter feed. Derrick Henry and Eddie George were on the radio today, and there is a picture of those two guys standing next to each other. And, I mean, you know how big Eddie George is. Okay, I've been around the guy in person. We all watched him play. We know that, like, one of the big criticisms, one of the only criticisms of him when he was playing was that he was so tall and he ran kind of upright. He's standing next to Derrick Henry and looking up at him.
That's fantastic.
I mean, that's just how incredibly built this guy is. Now, for the part two of the Paul Kaharsky props that we'll throw out into this, he has a great article with the help of ESPN Stats and Info about Delanie Walker and his importance to the Tennessee Titans offense, okay? The Atlanta Falcons lead the league in yards per play with 6.8. When Delanie Walker is on the field, the Tennessee Titans are the second-best team in the NFL with 6.5 average yards per play. Now, when we're without Delanie Walker on any given snap, that number drops to 5.1, which is 27th in the NFL. All that is to say, Delanie Walker's a beast.
Oh, we already knew that. But that is fantastic. I wish we had another Delanie. If we could clone him and put him on the other side of the field, I think that would be the cure to a lot of our offensive woes. But he's a difference maker. I listened to the Delanie Walker show when they do it on Nashville radio, and he's just fantastic. He was talking about, like, in the Cleveland game where he only had one catch for 20 yards, 21 yards. It's a really good play. They were triple-teaming him virtually the whole time. He goes into the huddle, and he tells Marcus, they're triple-teaming me every play. Don't throw it to me. Someone else is going to be open. Don't force feed me the ball. That's the kind of team first attitude. He just never ceases to impress me. And then to see it, you know, actually quantified statistically about his effect. You know, when Walker's on the field, we're an elite offense. When he's not, we're pretty shite. So we can see that with our own eyes, but it's really a feather in his cap when you can say, here are the numbers, buddy, and you make a difference.
And it's not just the amount of times that we throw it to Delanie Walker. It's just the threat that he represents and the respect that he draws from other defenses. When Delanie Walker is on the field, Mariota's completion percentage is 65.8. It drops to 56.9 when he's not on the field. He has 10 touchdowns and 3 interceptions with him on the field, but 4 touchdowns and 3 interceptions without him on the field. And his quarterback ranking, his QBR, the ESPN stat, drops from 74.1 when he's on the field to a lowly 18.5 when he's not. That's how good Delanie Walker is. And that's the combination of the impact he makes in the run game and the impact and the dominance that he has in the pass game. I mean, it's just unreal how pivotal he is to this offense. And it also shows how good of a job this coaching staff is of showcasing him in this offense.
And you'll notice, and we've all talked Delanie Walker's run-blocking ability up, but if you notice every now and again, they'll send him on a route, on a running play, similar to what they would do with receivers on the outside, that, you know, that they'll be coached to just – if it's man defense, if you think the corner's going to turn, just run and take him with you. It's just as good as a block. They'll do that with Delanie some, and it's actually more effective sometimes than him actually pushing a guy physically, because he'll move 2 guys or 3 guys, get them going 3 or 4 steps in the wrong direction, what they term false steps, but it's actually a run and play. And just be on the lookout for that, and maybe we'll see it some San Diego too. But it's really cool, and it's just the whole tweaking the dials things, you know. Can you put Delanie in line and have him block and actually be in an above-average blocker on his man? Yeah, but they get creative with some of this stuff. And I know, and we've done it too. We've been critical of the coaching staff, but we've also given them props when it's time. You know, I think we've been fair for the most part. Maybe me and you with a little bit of and Dan too, actually, lean a little bit on the optimistic side, but more of like just be realist, you know. But Marcus, in the past 4 weeks, has a passer rating of 120.7, August. He's second in the NFL only to Tom Brady. That's the kind of month he had. So we're trending upwards. You know, I know we went 4-4 in the first half. Probably could have went 6-2 or 2-6. That we were on a razor thin edge on some of those, but we need to finish the season 5-3. I think we can win the division at 9-7. So why don't we lead it into our Know Your Enemy segment and talk Chargers coming up?
Right on. Know Your Enemy.
All right, August, we got the Chargers Sunday at 3:25 Central, 4:25 kickoff, and it cannot get here soon enough. So for our Know Your Enemy segment, let's start with today, of the day of us recording this, and you might have picked up on this. We're recording November 3rd. On November 3rd, 2015, you know what day that was?
What day?
The day we fired Ken Whisenhunt. Today's the 1-year anniversary. And then we get to see him on Sunday. Yeah. And to take it even further, 6 years ago today, we claimed Titans legend Randy Moss. So, big day. Big day for us.
What?
Okay. Well, let's kind of drill down into the Whisenhunt thing. Do you think that's a push or an advantage him or advantage us as far as the, let's say, intimacy of the schemes go?
No, I mean, I'd say it's a push. I mean, Malarkey knows what Ken Whisenhunt wants to do just as much as Whisenhunt, you know, knows what Malarkey wants to do. So I don't think there's like an advantage on either side necessarily, but the storylines for this game are absolutely abundant. I mean, you have the fact that it, you know, when we drafted Mariota, anybody that wants to go back and listen to the archives of around that time, the big hubbub was that up until draft day, we might set up a trade where we trade Mariota, basically the rights for Mariota or the draft pick to get him to San Diego for Phillip Rivers, because this is a franchise that wanted to win now. And Wisenhunt, you know, it had such a electric chemistry with Phillip Rivers. And obviously that didn't happen. So there's been a whole lot of kind of looking back of, you know, what could have been, what should have been, what did end up happening. And then the other aspect of it is Dexter McCluster is now, you know, playing a significant role for the San Diego Chargers. And throw on top of that, Joey Bosa was a guy that was linked to the Titans for a decent amount of time. You know, he missed all the training camp with his contract issue and then had, I think, a hamstring injury that kept him out for the first four or five games. But he ended up being the defensive rookie of the month for the NFL. In his first four games, he's had four sacks. He's had a big impact on their ability to stop the run. So, I mean, this is a Chargers team that's at the bottom of their division. They've only won three games. I think they're 3-5 right now. But once again, it's a team that is hungry and trying to turn things around. So, you know, considering the history that the Titans have had going out west, especially against the Chargers, and I can't remember the last time that we won or even had a decent showing for them out there. It's going to be a really, really interesting matchup. I'm not going to put it as the importance on the coaching staff that we've seen over the past couple of weeks, but, man, if they can win this game, it sets a whole lot of things up really well.
I'm nervous about this game, though, August. The Chargers have played better than their record, and I think they're a dangerous team. I really do, and there's just something about them whooping up on this franchise. But I will say, we're a completely new team. None of that matters. And they've been really injured, you know. And here's the thing I noticed. I was trying to do a little research on them leading up to this, and I think last week they played Denver, which is going to hit their quarterback, pretty much get to everybody's quarterback with that defense. But Wisenhunt is still exposing his quarterback. Rivers is getting beat to hell out there. And it's been an injured team. They have lost Keenan Allen, the receiver. They Danny Woodhead, Jason Verrett. Some of their best players are out, and they've still been competitive in games. And I think they lost two within, the last minute of a game on some fluke stuff, like Melvin Gordon fumbling and – so forth.
Yeah.
So,
they're in every game. They just keep finding new ways to lose. That's kind of their MO.
That's kind of how we started the first month of the year, actually. We were in it and probably should have won a couple of those games that we lost and found a way to lose. So I can relate to that frustration. But I think Rivers is a fantastic quarterback. Whether somebody – I know a lot of people, he has a knack of kind of grading on with his antics and attitude, but he's really good. But the defense scene, I was digging into some stats, and I'm sure you were too. Rivers has thrown for 2,174 yards. The Chargers defense has had 2,200 yards thrown on them. So they've been susceptible. I mean, Rivers is on pace for over 4,000 passing yards. And 4,300, and they're giving up on pace for 4,400. So I feel like we can make some hay there. I know it doesn't mean much, August, but we ran down their throats in the preseason, and I would really love to see us get a couple big runs out of both our running backs against them.
Yeah, the one thing that you got to remember with the San Diego Chargers, they are 3-5. However, they are one of the only teams in the NFL with a losing record that has a positive point differential. They're plus 13. The Titans have a negative 1 point differential. This team, like I said, they keep inventing ways to lose games. They're in it every single time. They're in it down to the wire. A lot of times they start out hot and then they end up getting beat in the second half, which is something that the Tennessee Titans fans who watch the Ken Whisenhunt era would not be all that surprised about. But you know, it's going to be a tough matchup for the Titans. I think the one thing that works in our favor is the fact that we do have the 10 days getting prepared. Having an extra long week to get prepared to go out to the West Coast. I think that means that the time differential probably won't be that big of an issue. And, I think with what the Titans went through with the Colts game and then, playing really, really well against the Jaguars, but giving up a lot in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter, I still think the Titans are going to be able to pull this one off. Phillip Rivers is a great quarterback. I can't stand the dude. I've never been able to stand the guy. However, when you look at the receiving options that he's had over the course of his career, the consistent injuries that the wide receivers have gone through, he makes chicken bleep into chicken salad more so than almost any quarterback I've seen outside of Peyton Manning, really. I mean, even Drew Brees has better targets and more depth than Phillip Rivers has. That defense is really starting to come into shape. That's one thing that kind of concerns me. However, I think that our tackles are going to be able to handle Joey Bosa a lot better than their more recent competition. So, I feel like this is a game the Titans are going to win. What do you think?
I think so, but I'm just kind of like you. When you look at matchups, all right, Bosa's been phenomenal. All that was advertised and more. It felt like the last month leading up to the draft was them just chipping away at his draft stock. And then with the holdout and, all that rigmarole, it looked even worse. People were talking about it. Then he actually gets on the field and he looks like not like a J.J. Watt type player. He's getting pressure. He's getting sacks. He's just really disruptive. And a lot of people were kind of starting him up to that. But I'm looking forward to seeing how Conklin handles him. And we've been smart. I know, and all the praise to the offensive line. But we have been mitigating the amount of time our tackles have been left on an island to block people. We've been smart with it. So I think we can mitigate that. It's really going to come down to how our defense holds up against Phillip Rivers. And for us to do that, we're going to have to let LeBeau release the hounds, man. We're going to have to come after him, I think.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, Rivers and Whisenhunt just are a match made in heaven for each other in the football sense. So he's going to send a lot of receivers out. Let Rivers get hit. They're not going to leave tight ends in the block. And their best running back is McCluster. He's not going to be in the block. It's going to be get through that offensive line. And if we can just make it quick, make him have to hold the ball for just a little bit longer, I hope our front seven has a big day. I still am not. Our back end of the defense, the DBs, make us nervous. Parris Cox is supposed to play. He's out of concussion protocol. I think that helps. I know he's an easy scapegoat for us, but the more you see the other corners play, the more you realize he's the second-best corner on the team, and we want him out there. So, yeah, let's go after Rivers and not ask the guys to have to hold up for 3.5-4 seconds. In coverage, let's get them on the ground. They're going to be able to run on us, and I think we're going to be able to run on them. So if we need to win the time of possession on this one, I don't want their offense to have 13 drives. If we can have the ball for 35, 36 minutes, to me, if we have a long drive and then they have a drive and hopefully we hold them without scoring and then the quarters almost over, I think that's how we beat this team. We use the clock against them, try to keep the points down, and then see if we can't pull out a
21-17 type of game. How do you see it playing out?
Exactly, kind of along those lines. I think that the best game plan for us, ideally, we'll be able to, you know, drop extra guys and allow the front seven to stop the run and then get pressure without bringing a whole lot of blitzes. Phillip Rivers is one of those few guys who generally does better against a blitz than he does against drop coverage. So I'm hoping that, you know, Brian Arakpo, Derek Morgan, Jarrell Casey, Carl Klug, Angelo Blackson, those sort of guys are able to have a big game and to give the guys in the secondary a good amount of you know, time and space to make a play. However, I think the way to beat the Chargers, really, because of the risk taker and the sort of, you know, deep ball, big shot offensive coordinator that Ken Whisenhunt is, the best way to beat them is to keep it close. Allow them to believe that they can run the ball with Melvin Gordon, who doesn't break big plays, doesn't get a whole lot of consistent first downs, but is just sort of he's almost like a glorified Antonio Andrews. Allow them to believe that he's going to have a significant impact on this game and then end up, you know, winning it in the fourth quarter. I don't think you're going to boat race this team. I don't think you're going to absolutely go out there and dominate them. However, I think our team has a better chance of executing when it comes down to it than the San Diego Chargers do. I think that's been the MO for the Chargers over the course of this season. However, they cannot let that defense tee off on Marcus, period.
We may be lucky facing them this week because we're coming off 10 days rest. They have been an injured team. I heard their one of their beat writers talking about that to start the season, their top four inside linebackers are out. Manti Te'o's on injured reserve, and they've been so injured there. So they're a 3-4 defense as well. I think it's Pagano's brother that runs their defense, if I remember correctly. So their inside linebacker are way, way down the depth chart, which should bode well for our running game. And if you remember last year, Travis Benjamin practically single-handedly beat us last year when he was with Cleveland. With Manziel throwing up prayers and him getting open, he is on the injury report and questionable for Sunday. Like I said, I don't pull for injuries, August, but I'm just saying if you're a good player for a Titans opponent and you're hurt, go ahead and take an extra week. Make sure that – get real healthy. I'm fine with it. I don't feel like I need to beat the Chargers and the Chargers be at 100%. I will take the win regardless because in my estimation, our playoff, we're pretty much in – double elimination tournament for the rest of the season. I think we can afford two losses. Anything over than that, and it's not going to matter. I think our playoff hopes will be dashed. So we need this win. We need to beat the rest of our division. There's four there, and then we got to beat either the Bears would probably be the most likely one, but the Chargers look to be the worst team in the best division. It looks like the AFC West is the best division in football this year, and that's the one we have to get through. So I don't see us beating Denver when we play them. Kansas City would be unlikely, even though our success against Kansas City is probably better than our success against the Chargers. So maybe that's the handcuff game. We need to beat either the Chiefs or the Chargers. And I think Sunday against the Chargers is our best chance. So I'm going to call for a Titans win. I'm going to go with my score, like I said, 21-17. I know that puts us at a razor-thin line, but we're trending upwards, and we're coming off rest. What's your final prediction, August?
My final prediction is probably 21-13.
21-13. All right. That would be a fantastic defensive performance. You know, let me look and see here. How many points have they scored each? They scored 19 on Denver. So we both may be a little extra optimistic. Maybe we get a couple turnovers. But it looks like they're good for.
I think we had the benefit of the 10 days of game plan.
Okay, I like it. I like it. We're going to come after, and we're going to keep the score down by ball control offense. So we're good. I got it. So we're both taking a win. All right. Well, that is Know Your Enemy. Coming out of the break here, now it's week 8, we're at the halfway point of the season. I feel like it's a really good time for us to have a 10-day rest, and then we have a couple games and then a bye. So we're coming down the stretch here. Curious, offense, defense, who would be your midseason MVPs at the halfway point here?
Offense, I think, clearly has to be DeMarco Murray. You know, it was a move that a lot of people around the NFL panned. Said, "Oh, he's washed up. He got run into the ground in Dallas." And you know, if you can't run for Chip Kelly, then you know you're clearly not a good running back in the NFL. DeMarco Murray, with his leadership in the locker room, with his consistency out on the field, and with his productivity in the pass game and the run game, has absolutely made everything else easier for everybody on this offensive line. However, if I had to give a number two MVP on offense, it'd be Taylor Lewan. Yeah, you heard that right, Kurt.
In these streets. All right, well, what about defense?
Dude, defense is tough. Man, as much as I want to go outside of the box and be like, oh, I'll give it to Dick LeBeau and what he's done with this entire defensive group, I would absolutely have to say Brian Arakpo. Even though he's been quiet over the past couple of weeks, his impact is, you know, and actually closing the deal, sealing the deal on sacks, I think it's freed everything up for everyone else. Now, with any good 3-4 defense, there is no, you know, single person who's your knight in shining armor. You know, part of it has to do with Angelo Blackson, Carl Klug, you know, Al Woods, those guys that play in the middle and to play along the front three, freeing things up. Darren Morgan has been great as an all-around linebacker, but Brian Arakpo being that sack master off the edge for us is critical in this defense, and so that's why he's my defensive MVP. Who are your two guys?
You nailed it. You really did. You took the words right out of my mouth. So I'm just going to echo your sentiment. DeMarco's been fantastic. As a matter of fact, August, I think he'll be in the running for Comeback Player of the Year, the actual AP award they give. So I he's just been phenomenal. He's been our best player on offense, other than our love for Delanie Walker and then talking about the stats and the difference he makes. So just by that alone, if you had to go with somebody other than DeMarco, you got to go with Delanie. Because of the impact he has. And then Arakpo, he's at 7 or 8 sacks. He's on pace for one of the best seasons we've had. And like you said, with the 3-4 defense, we're not going to be stars, you know, a star-studded defense. Everybody has to do their job. And the way LeBeau coaches, we can win with role players in a lot of positions, but having an elite pass rusher. And Arakpo is borderline in that category. If he still played for Washington and was up near the lead league for sacks, and I think he was the leader for like week 5 and 6 or something, he'd be getting way more press, August. It's been fantastic what he's done for us. So that's my guys too. I'm with you 100%. Did you have something else to add?
Two guys. Delanie Walker and DeMarco Murray are probably going to make the All-Pro or, you know, at least the Pro Bowl out of it.
And Lewan should.
Yes. Yeah, Taylor Lewan is not going to get the respect that he deserves. for how good he has been over the course of this season. For everybody who has ever talked crap about him and who thought that he wasn't going to be able to, you know, transform into a top five offensive tackle, he absolutely has. That kid has been a beast. And it's really just the number of wins that we have that is going to dictate whether or not he gets the props that he deserves. So I had to throw, an honorable mention in there for Taylor Lewan.
You know what? And Russ Grimm for that. And I hope Robinson is in the running for general manager of the year. The turnaround we've had in one offseason of him, it's been crazy. We went from a shambled team with no direction to arguably the best offense and best rushing attack in the league with the moves he made. But we can go on and on about that, and we'll have all offseason too as well. Go ahead.
And he did all of that with moves that were not universally hailed around the league. I mean, a lot of people mm-hmm. say, oh, what are they doing paying all this money to DeMarco Murray when running backs don't matter in this league? And then they get the Jack Conklin draft pick. They sign Ben Jones. And you can look at even – I love Football Outsiders. I think they're so brilliant. And if you go back and look through all the threads when that stuff happened, they were like, oh, my God, what are the Titans doing trying to play a 1940s style of football? And now people are starting to come around – to realize, the Titans are doing something very specific and very realistic and very repeatable and respecting it. There's no way in my mind that he doesn't get the award for GM of the year. I can't imagine a situation in which he doesn't. He probably won't, because if we don't make the playoffs, then he won't get it. But to turn this team around from all the losses they've had over the past 3 years, especially, to putting them on track for a team that could, you know, has a much brighter future. I mean, what, are you going to give it to the GM of the Jaguars? Are you going to give it to, somebody who brought in a whole bunch of talent? Doesn't make any sense. Everything John Robinson and Mike Mularkey did made sense, and that's why it's working on the football field.
And we still have an extra first and third next year based off his moves made this past offseason. So there's still dividends yet to come. So great episode, August. I can't wait for this game. I'm looking forward to talking to you on Sunday. Hopefully we'll have a chance for a live reaction show, and we'll try to drag Dan on. I know he's been busy. So for Dan and August and myself, make sure to find us on Twitter. I'm at Drunkest Droog, at DanomiteTN, and at AugustWest_MCM. Find us on iTunes. Leave us a good review, guys. We want the 5 stars. Leave a rating, and it helps so much, and we really appreciate it. So we will talk to you soon. Titans, let's go win.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. That marvelous. That glorious. That cotton picking Tennessee.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.